live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Out of town, but broadcasting live every day through our main studio all over the world. And before I do a show, each week I sit and look at the topics that I believe would empower people. And I try to select information that at the end of a show you can say, yeah, I'm glad I tuned in. I learned something. I'm more aware of what's going on and the choices I have and the solutions that are available. And that's exactly what we're going to do today. We're going to talk about why the B complex is so important in mental disorders, a study from the University of Manchester, and how selenium, a very important micromineral, can help cut a woman's bladder cancer risk by a third, and how simple L-carnitine can save your life if you're diabetic, and a lot of people need that and don't know it, and how vitamin E reduces inflammation, and how we can live a longer life. All the research comes from peer-reviewed literature, from major institutions. It's just not reported by and large, with some exceptions, in the mainstream media, and in a context that could really motivate us to change. That leads me to a large segment of our program today. I'm going to be doing a special commentary on the mainstream and alternative media ignoring the truth in reporting. Now, they can either ignore it or they can lie about it. I'll give you very specific examples. I'll also show you something from the New York Times engaging in fake reporting and show you how it impacts our lives. So that's a big part of today's show. And on that, we'll start with a short commentary by Keith Overman. He is a major and highly articulate person for the corporate liberal community, and therefore represents one of the top five articulate spokespersons. So we'll hear what he has to say, and then I'll offer my challenge to him. My guest in the second part of our program today will be Professor Ellen Brown. I believe that the single biggest crisis facing us in the short term, not the long term, environmental change is the long term, and long term meaning the next 5 years, but I'm talking about in the short term, in the next 1 to 2 years, because it is my belief, based upon all that I have studied, that this president is unlikely to finish his term. And I will go into a greater depth of why I believe that's the case on some upcoming programs. But one of the things behind our concerns today is something that is not discussed anywhere in the media, and that is derivatives and the real state of our economies, the bail-ins, the austerity programs, and the derivatives. So we will have an in-depth discussion about this today, and then you'll see why this is so important and what you could be doing to get out of harm's way. So we'll give you the solution. Also, I'll be doing some reporting on the latest on environmental issues today, including eastern coastal cities could flood 3 times a week coming up. And this is from Climate Central. And also, looming climate catastrophe, extinction in 9 years, by Dave Lindorf, and from an Arctic News report. And he's not alone in this reporting. There are many qualified journalists who are also saying the same thing. Why aren't we paying attention? Why do we think this is somehow unimportant? Well, we can deny its significance, but it's still going to happen. I'd rather you be out of harm's way and safe and take a little time, because you have some time to plan and then make your moves if you choose to. So that's what we have today. Oh, and I don't know if we'll have time, but if there is time today, I will address this Milo controversy. I didn't know who the man was, never heard of him, until a few weeks ago when some of the listeners were asking about him. And so I just finished a long trip, and I decided to take a day just not to open the emails or answer the phone. And I watched about 10 of his lectures and about 5 to 10 of his debates, and I came up with some insights, and it's all proving prophetic. I'll give you my input on Milo's and his intemperance and what I consider xenophobic, Islamophobic, racist, crude, rude, vulgar temperament, and why he should have been called out long ago and hasn't, but until now. And I'll explain why he is now and had a press conference yesterday apologizing. Let's begin. And we always like to begin with something constructive and positive that we can do something good about. This is from the University of Manchester. And the title is Worldwide Studies Find Vitamin B Significantly Reduces Symptoms of Mental Disorders. Now, we cannot escape the reality that in developed nations like Europe and the United States and Japan, people are often overfed and undernourished. A growing body of literature links dietary choices to brain health and the risks of psychiatric illness. And B vitamins are required for proper functioning of the methylation cycle, monoamine production, DNA synthesis, and the maintenance of phospholipids, such as myelin. A review of the worldwide studies has found that add-on treatment with high-dose B vitamins, including B6, B8, B12, can significantly reduce symptoms of schizophrenia more than standard treatments alone. That's a big deal. The research on the effects of vitamins and mineral supplements on symptoms of schizophrenia was published in Psychological Medicine, which, by the way, is one of the world's leading psychological journals. And the B vitamin is a dietary powerhouse. It, first of all, what does it do above and beyond everything else? It creates energy in the body. It enhances the performance of nearly every system in your body. And the connection between mental health and B12 deficiency, because as a vegan, I advocate people supplementing with a simple B12. In fact, I advocate everyone over the age of 25 to have a simple B vitamin that would contain 25 milligrams of B1, 25 milligrams of B6, 1 milligram of methylated B12, 1 milligram of methylated folic acid, and trimethylglycine at about 200 milligrams. That alone, I believe, would save about 100,000 people from dying each year from elevated homocysteine level, which is an inflammatory marker that the liver produces that shows that your heart is in jeopardy. Now, when you take an aspirin because you don't want to get a stroke, which in and of itself is not a flawed idea, the idea is good. The logic of it is reasonable. If you take an aspirin, the aspirin will thin your blood and hence prevent the clotting, the aggregation of red blood cells coming together or other fatty substances in the blood, and hence forming a clot that can become an ischemic episode and or blocking of the artery, becoming a heart attack or a stroke. So where the logic is good, its actual application is counterproductive. What do I mean? We want to do something right to save lives. That's good. But when you thin the blood with an aspirin, you are also not looking at the side effects of the aspirin. 25,000 people or more died this past year and die just about every year from taking aspirin because of bleeding. It also is known that aspirin destroys vitamin C, B1, B2, B6, B12, and folic acid, the very nutrients you need to prevent an elevation in homocysteine levels. So, here then is the new reality, where the logic is correct, which is not uncommon in medicine. The practical application of the paradigm is completely and grossly flawed, because you increase your risk of a heart attack at the same time you decrease your risk of a stroke. Now, because heart attack and stroke are the two medically induced death each year, more than cancer or diabetes, anywhere from, let's say, 550 to 600,000 for each, what you're seeing is, okay, good news, I'm not dying of a stroke, I'm taking aspirin. Bad news, I'm going to die of a heart attack because of aspirin. Now, you would think that the medical community could understand this. They don't. I sat in a leading cardiologist's office recently. Every year, I have to go for a full spectrum of medical examinations. Everything you could imagine, every single thing you could get tested, I get tested. It's very comprehensive, including a stress cardiovascular test. All the blood workups done. And for all these 35 years I've been getting this test, it comes out perfect every year. So we're having a conversation, and what was interesting is and I didn't know this, the cardiologist says, by the way, I tune in your show regularly, and I get a lot of information from it. And I said, good, you pass it on to the patients? And he was quiet. And so I said, okay, well, see you again next year. And as I get up to leave, he says, he opens up a drawer. He says, I want to show you something, Gary. And he takes out the very things he had heard me talk about on the show that can reduce your risk of both a stroke and a heart attack. The omega-3 fatty acids at about 3,000 units. In the morning, half. In the afternoon, half. 1,500, 1,500. Vitamin E from mixed tocopherols and tocotrienols. 400 in the morning, 400 in the afternoon. L-carnitine, 1,000 in the morning, 1,000 in the afternoon. Unless you have a rapid heartbeat or, let's say, some form of irregular heartbeat, and like AFib, which you could take 2,000 milligrams of L-carnitine, which would make a big difference. Hawthorn at about 200 milligrams, ginkgo biloba, L-taurine at 1,000 milligrams, and magnesium, the superstar of superstars, the one nutrient that can really help prevent heart attacks and is the most single important mineral in the body when it comes to your heart. And at about 1,000 milligrams in the morning and about 400 milligrams in the evening before you go to bed. And then cayenne pepper to thin the blood, naturally. And at high heat unit, generally 40,000 high heat unit, which is one capsule in the morning, one at night. He said, I take all these. I said, do you tell your patients the same thing? And he said, no. Why not? Well, it's complicated. Simplify it for me. Well, in medicine, when you're board certified in a specialty, you've gotten as far as you can go within the orthodox framework. Anything beyond that, you have to do on your own. And you have to take your continuing education credits to show that you are proficient in maintaining that skill. Nowhere, absolutely nowhere, in the medical school teachings, in the continuing education, in the state monitoring, is there any recommendation for what I'm doing for myself? If I were to tell all my patients this, and if they were to go to another cardiologist, I'd be reported to the state. He said, so though I want my patients healthy, and I try to do it with dietary changes, I can't go beyond that. I said, well, diet's good. That's it. That's a big step forward. But the supplements and the diet, that's you need them both. So I just want to share that with you to let you know that we should be taking the B vitamins. But if our physicians are not familiar with the B vitamins and what they do, if they do not have a good reference, they're not going to suggest it for you. And for those who are cynical or bitter or skeptical that nutrition plays any major role in health, when the Codex Alimentarius Committee was going to establish a vitamin value for the whole world, including the United States, countries that went along with it, now you can't even buy a vitamin in those countries unless it's by prescription. Just to get a little tiny jar of a zinc vitamin, you have to first go to the physician to get 10 milligrams zinc, go to a drugstore, and only in a drugstore can you get it because all the vitamins have been wiped out in a lot of countries because everything about Codex was a part of it was the precursor to the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and it's all about corporatization. It's all about profits. It's a complete fraud. So I volunteered. I sent an application to be an expert witness in nutrition and to show qualifications on the topic, on the actual role of vitamins and minerals. I sent, are you ready for this? 525,000. Let me repeat that. That's over 500,000 scientific abstracts on the safety, efficacy, chemistry, and the higher-end values, therapeutic values, of vitamins and minerals. That's it. Nothing else. And these were all from peer-reviewed literature. And yet, they didn't invite me to testify. So they didn't want to know the truth. Because if they saw how many studies actually are in the scientific literature, qualified studies published in peer-reviewed literature showing you how important vitamins and minerals are and what they do, well, then they couldn't proceed with their political agenda and their bias. So remember, you want to prevent a heart attack or stroke, you take your B-complex. You want to increase your risk of a stroke or a heart attack, you take an aspirin each day. Now, when it comes to psychiatry, we have seen B12 in particular is important for depression. And in fact, almost all people who are depressed, if you see their blood chemical levels, they're deficient in B12. You start giving them B12 and you see a change. In fact, one of the symptoms of a B12 deficiency is psychosis. And the neuropsychiatric symptoms of B12 deficiency can precede the development of anemia. So I do not believe in antipsychotics or antidepressant medication. And schizophrenia in and of itself, I'm glad that they're saying it's been helping them, but there is no such thing as a defined schizophrenia. I'll deal with that on a later date. The symptoms are what they're confusing with a brain chemical imbalance. Bergamot. Berga, B-E-R-G, Amot, A-M-O-T. Now, for those in this audience who have a background in herbology, they'll know bergamot. What does it do? It protects your heart. It lowers your blood sugar, which helps you with diabetes, and it reduces anxiety. And it's the bergamot is a fruit from Italy, and it could actually eliminate, if we took it regularly, it could help with the elimination of a lot of the cholesterol-lowering statin drugs, which destroy your ubiquinone, your coenzyme Q10 level in the body. And I would love to see people stop taking Lipitor. But keep in mind, these cholesterol medications are dangerous. For example, the Food and Drug Administration now requires statin drugs to carry labels warning of their association with type 2 diabetes, confusion, memory loss, and muscle pain. In addition, these toxic medications can cause liver toxicity, fatigue, exercise intolerance, heart failure, and even premature death. Well, fortunately, an extract from an unusual orange grown in the south of sunny Italy is impressing researchers with its ability to safely improve heart health and control blood sugar and reduce the symptoms associated with chronic stress. The bergamot oranges are a treasure trove of antioxidants and flavonoids. And the bergamot, that's B-E-R-G-A-M-O-T, orange, it's scientifically known as a citrus. Bergamia is grown in the Calabria region of southern Italy. In small amounts, the oil and the peel are commercially used as flavorings. And it's you'll see it in essential oils. They'll use the bergamot peel to give Earl Grey tea its characteristic aroma. Although the peel and the pulp and the juice are packed with nutrients, the fruit is so intensely bitter that it would be difficult to ingest enough to receive any benefits. However, concentrated bergamot extracts are available, and these extracts can produce some striking results and really good if you have elevated cholesterol. Why? Because they're loaded with polyphenols, flavonoids, and flavonoid derivatives, particularly one. Actually, there's two. There's one that's called Brut, B-R-U-T, Aridine, E-R-I-D-I-N-E, and Melatidine, M-E-L-I-T-I-D-I-N-E. Now, those are responsible for lowering your cholesterol level. So Try those in the future, and I think you'll see a benefit. Also, L-carnitine, very important for your heart, very important for getting energy to your heart, very important for allowing the fatty acids to be utilized in your body. It decreases the bad LDL oxidation, and diabetic patients have a lot of inflammation, and this helps turn that down. So L-carnitine significantly reduces the level of oxidation of the low-density lipoprotein in patients with diabetes. That's good. And this was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. They were using 2,000 milligrams a day. I suggest that also 1,000 morning, 1,000 night. And also escalating the amount of inorganic phosphate in the diet can damage lung health and set the stage for lung cancer, according to a new report. Most people don't use that, so that was in the American Journal of Respiratory and Critical Care Medicine. And also, vitamin E reduces inflammation. This was published in the Experimental Physiology. Vitamin E reduces inflammation all over the body. This research was done at the University of Illinois. And so if you have any kind of inflammation, vitamin E could help. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Like a rose, you need some water. If you thirst and fall asleep, take my ocean full of teas and I'm mixed up in this and I will hope that we can swim. And then we'll star against the current.
For all the people listening all over the world, stormy waves upon my skin. Appreciate all the input. When people say that they have an interest in a particular area, we always try to find articles or discuss those issues on the air. That's one of the reasons I've been, for example, playing some of the audio clips when some of the women in the audience says, Gary, would you highlight what happens in other cultures when it comes to attacks against women? And so I did. So we're very interested in what you have to say. For all the years that you were on MSNBC, on a regular basis, we sent you original, in-depth, white paper, investigative reports, articles that have been published showing you that people in the power positions and people in the media and people in different agencies were not dealing with, for example, post-traumatic stress disorder, Gulf War syndrome, and we showed what was really causing these. We showed you, I sent you a documentary on American veterans forgotten and betrayed, never responded. All told, more than 50 documentaries, more than 100 articles were sent, not just to you, but to every single member of both the conservative and liberal media. Hundreds upon hundreds sent out. Not one single person even responded. Sorry, we got your material, but we don't use outside material. Fine. There is a certain arrogance and elitism that goes with being brought into the inner sanctums of mainstream or alternative media. I thought a good journalist was supposed to not be a part of groupthink, have talking points. But I want to be very specific now and show you that virtually everything that's important in the mainstream media is fake. And I'm going to start by looking at the medical-industrial complex. Mind you, these are the people that actually paid your and Rachel Maddow and Sean Hannity's salaries, like it or not. Shouldn't you then take a look at where your money comes from and is it legitimate? Otherwise, why not have a Coke dealer support your ads? Why not have Blood Diamonds? If it makes no difference to you who your sponsor is, then why discriminate? Because your sponsors are the problem. I'll be specific. Vaccines. In this case, the denial of peer-reviewed literature showing the ineffectiveness and lack of safety of vaccines. How many papers are we talking about? Over 2,000 papers from the scientific peer-reviewed literature that you could easily access on PubMed and the National Library of Medicine, the same identical studies that are available to and used by the National Academy of Science and all the governmental agencies that would have stopped all mandatory vaccines because of the toxic chemicals in them, from aluminum to formaldehyde, from polysorbate 80 to mercury. There's never been a study showing any of those are safe, and yet those are what are used, and then they were let out from any legal responsibility because of a politician who went later to work for the pharmaceutical industry, lobbied and got a bill passed on their behalf. Now, just the latest in this is an article that just came out today showing you the censorship in the media. Let me give you an example. We have a censor, and this is from James O. Grundig, Censored Study of Vaccinated versus Unvaccinated Sees Daylight. And it talks about after 30 years of the government immunizing the vaccine makers from harm, the long-delayed first-of-its-kind study on vaccinated versus unvaccinated children has arrived. 5 years of designing and conducting the epidemiological survey to more than one censorship roadblock from scientific journals to thwart the study's findings and a damning indictment against vaccines being a false flag cure, it appeared in the public domain. For 6 hours, a 34-page study breached daylight for 6 hours before the URL link vanished and leaked from a source giving the release the half-life of a firefly. But it did afford us enough time to download the document and share it with the study's author, who confirmed its authenticity. Quote, vaccination and health outcomes, a survey of 6 to 12-year-olds, vaccinated and unvaccinated children based on mother's reports by and a whole team of scientists led by Anthony Mawson. And this was done at the Public Health Initiative at Jackson State University, Jackson, Mississippi. And it was co-financed with a nonprofit organization, Generation Rescue, Inc., and Children's Medical Safety Research Institute. Not a single dollar from the government was involved or from the vaccine industry. Well, why hasn't the CDC ever sponsored the same study? Did the health agencies neglect doing so by design? Well, after you read the conclusions, that appears to be the case, since it would have run counter to the CDC's message that all vaccines are safe and effective, the very same all vaccines are safe and effective that all of the people on all the networks, including and especially CNN, continue to hammer at people. Get your flu vaccine. 36,000 people die every year. Show me the 36,000. You can't. That figure does not exist. I can show you from the CDC's own website that they have commingled two statistics, influenza and pneumonia. You can't do that. That's fraud. That's bad science. Because when you put in the people dying of pneumonia, that's 90% of the figure. And generally, in most years, under 1,000 people die of the flu each year in the United States. So first, the mainstream media accepts and promotes the lies of the vaccine manufacturers. On top of that, it denies the validity of natural approaches to helping the body's own immune system, and the scientific literature is replete with vitamin D and vitamin C and echinacea and astragalus, other nutrients that can impact a person's immune system and hence lessen or prevent many of these conditions. So fake news promotes vaccines, including the flu vaccine, and they're using faulty and completely fraudulent science. So along comes a study showing, gee whiz, there's a big difference. In fact, quote, here's the summary. In summary, vaccination, non-white race, and male gender were significantly associated with NDD after controlling for other factors. Well, that's a big deal. So, 68,000 board members of Frontier Journal read this after a two-month peer review process, and then they yanked it. You can bet. All kinds of pressure to do that. So that's just one example. So even when we ask for the truth and we're given the truth is kept from us, and you don't see a single mainstream journalists out there looking for the truth. What about telling the truth about mammograms? They're one of the biggest medical frauds in history and a gross abuse of women. Every feminist group should be against mammograms. You should be for thermograms because thermograms actually use no ionizing radiation, do not crush a woman's breast, and instead actually show you heat differentiation in the cells, and the cancer cells register differently and therefore are far more accurate, non-invasive, not expensive. But no, all the money goes to the different groups wearing their pink outfits and ribbons and doing something for cancer, and the media promotes it. Show me how many dollars that are raised for the Walk for the Cure and all these others actually go to helping patients. Show it to me. Show me how many studies they publish based upon the research they've done from the money they've collected that can show cures. They can't. It doesn't exist. Now, show me what you've done looking at doctors who have gotten good statistical results using non-invasive, non-toxic treatments like Dr. Stanislav Brzezinski. You haven't done it. False news. Also, how about the failure of the war on cancer? You have had a complete abysmal fail in the war on cancer because of chemotherapy and radiation. Yet where's the journalists who are doing the research showing the truth of it? The denial of natural health remedies, the denial of prevention, and unfounded attacks on supplement makers. Almost every time there is an article in the mainstream media, it is in all the media. That means there was a whole machine behind this. And so we then have to come out, look at the study, show that it's fraudulent in all cases. There's never been one where they've been accurate. But how many people will listen to our measured and accurate report when we've done our homework? A tiny fraction compared to the mainstream media. What about the state of American health? Why haven't you not pushed the mainstream media for universal health care? Because Obamacare has failed and was a fraud to begin with. And the private insurance industry is a fraud. $1 trillion a year, at least $1 trillion a year, goes into their pockets. If we had universal health care, then everybody would be covered. We would save at least $1.5 trillion. We would have no-fault medical insurance. Everybody could be helped, and then we could have a national preventative program. Where is the media in leading that charge? You had all the people on. The left in particular had all of Obama's spokesperson on talking about Obamacare. You defended it. You promoted it. But you're functionally illiterate on everything you talk about when it comes to health. I've yet to see anyone, including Dr. Gupta, who knows anything about health. But you sure do know how to propagandize. Also, if a country is spending more on health care than any other country in the world, and we have the worst results, shouldn't that be a red flag? Shouldn't we be saying, why does an operation for a kidney transplant cost $125,000 in the United States, but the same identical kidney transplant in Spain or Greece or another country that does perfectly good surgeries will cost 1/20th of that amount? You have no discussion about the profit within medicine because you don't discuss the profit in your own industries. Why don't you talk about the pharmaceutical industry and its corruption and crimes? Let me make it even simpler for you. Let's say that you had, Mr. Oberman, let's say that you had a publicist come to you and say, I'd like to have a person on the air to talk about a project they're working on. Okay, interesting idea. And what do you say? Well, first I got to tell you that the person I'm representing has been found guilty on more than about 500 times. And has spent over $100 billion in restitution. They've been caught doing price fixing and falsifying data, but they've never gone to jail. They've never been personally fined. Their corporation's fined, but they run the corporation. They green-lighted their fraudulent activity. But they'll make a great guest. Would you have that person on the air? Would you allow anyone from the pharmaceutical industry on, knowing that the pharmaceutical industry has the number one group of criminals in the United States, white-collar criminals, who have committed, their corporations have committed crime, but nothing has happened to the corporation. After paying a fine, their stock is fine. Or how about someone from Wall Street? Wall Street has paid more than $300 billion, over $250 billion in fines. They've been found guilty of numerous crimes, and yet we still trust them when they go on a talk show on MSNBC or Fox News, and they're talking with Neil Cavuto, who I happen to like, Neil. I was on his show a couple of times. I thought he was a decent interviewer. And yet, when was the last time they called out the people who were wrong about the recession? Where was the last time you called out the people who were wrong about weapons of mass destruction? When did you or anyone else on the left, when did you call out the people who were wrong about Libya? Did you do your homework on Libya? I have. Bring me on to debate you. I'd love that. Plight, I don't yell and scream. You can. That's your modus operandi. You and Bill O'Reilly have something in common. And just look at the facts of Libya before Democracy Now! And Amy Goodman and others decided it wouldn't be a bad idea to go after them because they were, you know, just attacking their own civilians in Benghazi. But the truth is they weren't. That was false news. And that was presented by our CIA and State Department and White House, and the mainstream and alternative media used it. Has anyone apologized? Do you want to take a look at Libya today? Do you want to take a look at Syria today? So you see, I'm looking at this from a different perspective. Let me give you another example, the fake news that all the media covered, the swine flu scare. It was reported widely that the CDC and the World Health Organization were informing you you had a pandemic that would wipe out tens of thousands of Americans. Truth, it was completely false. There was no epidemic. It was the conservative Forbes magazine that wrote about the weapons of the World Health Organization faking a pandemic. Cheryl Atkinson of CBS investigation showed the vast majority of the flu cases that the mainstream media were reporting were either not H1N1 or not flu at all. Fake news. Mainstream media headlines that supplements, in particular vitamin C, D, and E, don't prevent heart attack, stroke, or breast cancer. Truth. We have libraries full of studies, hundreds of studies showing just the opposite in peer literature. Let's take a look at the psychiatric profession. How about this? The creation of fake mental disorders like parental defiance disorders, social anxiety disorders. These do not exist. Have you or anyone from the mainstream media gone into one of the sessions where a group of people sit around a table and show a show of hands that they've created a new disease? Where's their science? There is none. Where's their biochemical reality? Doesn't exist. Where's their x-rays, MRIs? None needed. So you're making up a new mental disease that has nothing to do with reality so you can sell a drug. The mainstream media, without exception, has continued to promote the idea that these mental disorders are real. And look at the psychiatric drugs. Look at the studies that talk about the dangers of the SSRIs and the other drugs. They're ineffective. In fact, a placebo, a sugar pill, has been shown to be is equally effective in many of these cases. Why didn't you promote that and then suggest maybe people should get off these drugs? Why don't you take a look at that 90% or more of the people in these school mass shootings have been on psychiatric medication? Why is it always about the gun? That's ideological. That's not good reporting. And also, what about reporting positively about the archaic criminal process of electroconvulsive therapy, which is now having a rebound in no small measure because the mainstream media is promoting it? And what about the emphasis on genetic causes of mental disorders versus behavioral and culture? You can't show me a genetic cause for these mental disorders. I can show you behavioral and cultural and environmental issues for these disorders. Example, fake news, the kind the mainstream media promotes. Genes and genetic inheritance are responsible for autism and ADD. Truth, studies from University of Montreal and elsewhere never reported by the mainstream media, that the majority of these genes were de novo and not inherited from parents. Mutations occurred in utero due to epigenetic factors. And what about your reporting on the agricultural industry? You did not report on the dangers of GMOs and the falsity of their false yields. You did not promote on the health consequences or the Seralini study on GMOs and what they could do to our bodies. And how about the human and environmental impacts? You did not report the fact that the nicotinides, the pesticides, were wiping out one half of all the bee population in the United States, which contributes about $3 billion a year to the agriculture. One in every three foods that we commonly eat, it comes from bee pollination. You won't attack the people causing it, the honeybee hive collapse, and human environmental dangers of industrially raised meat and dairy. When was the last time someone inside the mainstream or alternative media went out to see what it means to be a chicken, what it means to be a fish, what it means to be a cow in a commercial industrial farming complex? You haven't been there. You don't write about it. Those of us who are vegans and have a higher consciousness on these issues, we are there in reporting, but you do not allow us to come on and talk about that and have legitimate, honest, open debates with the meat eaters and those who promote factory farming and promote industrial agriculture and monoagriculture. We do not have an opportunity to debate these issues. And what about Monsanto? How much money does your company make for Monsanto? And what about Big Agri corruption and crimes of Big Agri? Let me give you a fake mainstream media. GMOs risks, they're simply safe. Wrong. Consumer Reports writes that 800 scientists regard GMOs as a bad idea, plus we have all the studies showing what harm it does. Fake labeling. The labeling GMOs would increase family food budget. That's what mainstream media said, costing hundreds of dollars a year. That was according to the University of California, Davis. You didn't say that University of California, Davis is funded by Monsanto. The truth, no study conducted in other countries showed a food cost increase of more than $1.60 a year for labeling. And what about your ignorance or your complicity in not telling the truth about the fossil fuel industry? You're ignorant of climate change's ultimate scientific findings, how bad it is and how urgent it is, the failure to report on climate change adverse effects on everyday life, and supporting the clean and clean energy. Your company has supported clean energy from coal. There is no such thing as clean coal. Ignoring greenhouse gas sources such as Big Agri and Big Military. When did you take on the military as the number one polluter in America? You didn't. The denial of peak oil and peak gas. You didn't talk about what's wrong with that. The denial of hydrofracking and gas pipeline threats. The viability of and safety of nuclear. There is no viability and there is no nuclear safety. The poor reporting on benefits of renewables. When was the last time your company, any company in mainstream media, did a report on geothermal in the United States? We have a lot of hot springs. We don't use them. Or wave power. How about the corruption in big oil? Fox West Coast Right Publications report on Oregon global warming petition that over 31,000 scientists denied carbon emissions contribute to climate change. Hence, they could say 31 scientists say climate change is a fraud. The truth? From analysis done by Yale University and Cambridge University, almost none of the climatologists and most identified work in private industry. So these were not climate scientists. And most of them work for private industry. So you had a biased, unqualified group. What about protecting the military-industrial complex? What about your failure to report on the cover-up of military sexual abuse and military contractors who have huge profits and are complicit in promoting war? What about dealing with the having a conflict of interest that we see on the screen that everyone who purports on any radio or television show has to show how much money they receive from the military-industrial complex? How about the real civilian deaths, not the ones you report, but the actual civilian deaths from drones and the depleted uranium? What about the faulty new military weapons and hardware from contractors like the F-35 at $1.5 trillion? How about the state of veterans' mental and physical health and unemployment and poverty? How about sexual harassment? Example, the mainstream media reported that Russian troops invaded eastern Ukraine. The truth? The Minsk talks with Russian NATO allies never mentioned the Russian troops in Ukraine. There was no withdrawal of Russian troops because there never were any Russian troops. Fake news, Colin Powell and Bush administration's weapons of mass destruction claim at the UN. The truth, Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson on this program talked about the speech that was written with pressure from Rumsfeld and Cheney and said that it was all bogus. The mainstream media and Obama report that Syrian Assad conducted an attack with sarin gas on Syrians. Lies. Truth. Seymour Hersh reported in London Review of Books how Obama omitted facts showing the opposite. Lies. Killing of bin Laden and buried at sea. True. Seymour Hersh reported through interviews with witnesses that bin Laden's body was blown to bits and simply shoveled in a duffel bag and dropped over the Kush Mountains. How about the parasitical practices of financial industry? How about the ongoing foreclosure crisis? How about the real unemployment? When was the last time someone on your network or any network or in the mainstream media said to the government, you are lying about unemployment? It is not 5%. It is closer to 24%. All you have to do is look at Williams shadow facts to calculate the actual unemployment. What about politicians' conflict of interest in the shadow money in politics? What about the real truth of surveillance and that every single phone call and email and text, everything you do, has been illegally captured by the National Security Agency? What about spying on civilians? What about real property poverty figures? What about the quality of Americans' education, the failure of our schools because of school privatization? What about the condition of our infrastructures? What about legislative preference of private interest over public interest? What about the corruption of law enforcement? What about the militarization of our law enforcement? What about the incarceration of people who shouldn't be in prisons in the first place, in private prisons and profit prisons? What about the rise in racism and right-wing hate culture? What about the social threats to the Christian right and the corruption in the churches? What about the corruption of the ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, and the corporate deep state in national local politics? And I could go on for another 10 years. So the next time you make suggestions, which you have every right to do, and I respect that right, and I respect how articulate you are in suggesting that we should call things out, how about starting by calling out the lies and deceptions that the mainstream media has engaged in constantly for decades? I'm Gary Nall. Let's go over to my guest now, standing by, Ellen Brown. Ellen is an economist, an attorney in Los Angeles, and founder of the Public Banking Institute, a nonprofit economic venture to find viable and sustainable solutions to America's banking crisis by promoting people-owned state and community banks. And she also was a Green Party candidate for California State Treasurer. And she's written extensively, including her book, The Public Bank Solution. Nice to have you with us today, Ellen.
Oh, thanks, Gary. That was a really interesting expose you just did. You've done brilliant research on health research. In fact, that was how I first heard about you, was reading the study that you did. I don't remember what year it was, but years ago, showing that drugs were the third leading cause of death, I think. So I've actually been writing lately about how the Trump administration could fund its $1 trillion infrastructure program without doing public-private, which is what they're talking about, and without raising taxes, et cetera. But I would love to write about also how to fund a new program that would replace Obamacare, like you're saying, health care for all.
That will be a separate discussion that I'll be happy to have with you. Real quick, because we don't have a lot of time. I'm sorry about that.
No problem. Ellen, I enjoyed listening to you.
Ellen, I'd like for you to tell people how serious the derivative bubble is. The largest banks throughout the world have $250 trillion in derivatives. The average person does not understand what a derivative is and why they should be concerned. So tie in first, what are derivatives? How big is the problem? And then how the bail-in that could impact a person's own savings and the money in their own bank if one of these derivatives collapses or goes bad?
Mm-hmm. Well, as you say, $250 trillion in derivatives. There's $100 trillion in sovereign bonds, so this would be like debts of Greece and other countries that are threatening to default. And the derivatives are basically just bets. So, and they're virtually all between among big players, big banks betting with each other. So they're all interconnected. The theory is that you bet both ways, right? So you hedge your bets. But if the problem is it's not, you're not, there's no insurance company here. There's no government guarantee or no backstop to make sure that the party on the other side actually has the money to pay up. So that was the problem we saw in 2008 when Lehman Brothers did not have the money to pay up on its bets. And one of its counterparties was AIG, this huge insurance company. And so the government had to rescue AIG, because if they had allowed AIG to fail, then all these banks would have failed that also had interconnecting bets. So we have this, our whole monetary system, it consists of this interconnected web of very shaky speculative bets. And if some major thing happens, like what people are concerned about right now is that Deutsche Bank could collapse. They're probably the biggest bank derivative player in the world. And they are on very shaky ground right now. So if, let's say, Spain goes bankrupt as they're, well, they have some big banks that are bankrupt. And what they're supposed to do under EU rules is bail in the creditors of the bank before they can bail out the bank with government money. So that means the creditors means the bondholders, the shareholders, and the largest class of creditor of any bank is its depositors. We think that the bank is just holding our money for us, but that's not true. When you put your money in the bank, it becomes the property of the bank, and all you have is an IOU, so they owe you that money. You are a creditor of the bank. So they're supposed to bail in all these parties. Theoretically, that means take their money. In other words, turn the money that is owed to you into stock in the bank. So you recapitalize yourself basically by confiscating the money of your creditors. So in Spain, they're protesting doing that because the creditors, including the depositors, and also these people who have bought these bonds that were sold to them as if they were very safe CD-type investments, when in fact they are bondholders that could lose their money. These are all the ordinary people of the country, and they've been sold a bill of goods. So the government wants to just bail out the banks, but the EU won't let them because EU rules say you have to first bail in the creditors. So they could actually pull out of the EU, or they could trigger the default of Deutsche Bank. There are just many moving parts over there in Europe, and because our banks are so interconnected with their banks through all this big derivative complex, our banks could go down as well. And we also have that policy in place under Dodd-Frank that our major banks are supposed to recapitalize themselves with the money of their creditors before they can get a government bailout. So if you have money in J.P. Morgan Chase or any of those big banks, you could be at risk.
We're right at the end of the program, and I'm inviting you back for a whole long segment on Friday to go into this in greater depth, including on the universal health care, that I have an idea, and I'd like to hear your ideas. But real quick, right now, do we have a bail-in policy in the United States in our banks? Is that a law?
It is. It's the Dodd-Frank Act.
Okay, so we're bailed in. Is it also true that if one of these derivatives, like a $45 trillion derivative, Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, if one of these companies fail, they would be bailed out first before the people who got deposits in the banks, and people could end up losing all their money in the bank because then the FDIC would say, well, you're not actually you're not in an insurance company. You're not covered by insurance, which is what we cover because you're actually a stockholder in the bank since it's been converted over to stock.
Well, that is, we're told that we're covered by deposit insurance. But the problem is the FDIC fund only has, I think it's up to about $74 billion right now, billion dollars in it. And there are over $10 trillion in deposits in the country, and about half of those are FDIC insured, which means they're under $100,000. So they don't have near enough money to cover the deposits of a major bank failure. For example, J.P. Morgan has well over $1 trillion in deposits. So what they would have to do is tap up their credit line with the Treasury, where they have like a $500 billion credit line. But even $500 billion would not be enough to cover a really major default. And the problem is, who's going to pay that $500 billion back? It's right now, the FDIC fund is it's actually owned by all the banks that put money into it. And that would crush the little banks if they had to pay anything like that. It nearly crushed them just having to pay, I think it was $6 billion after the 2008 collapse. So the whole thing is very shaky, and it's even shakier in Europe, where they just don't, the governments just don't have the money for
No bank and no Federal Reserve or no European Central Bank in the world can cover a $50 trillion loss from one bank. And that's what we're facing. We're facing tens of trillions of dollars per major bank of the top five in the United States. If one of those goes bad, and it's inevitable one of them is going to go bad, it could collapse the entire economic system in the United States, the banking system.
Yeah, that's the issue, and that's why they keep all these balls in the air, even though they should let these banks go bankrupt. I mean, that's capitalism, but banks are favored parties, theoretically.
Now maybe we can make that a cause and do some important articles and broadcasts, even a documentary, to show people how close we are to this cliff that the banking system is taking us over. I want to thank you. I'm sorry for the short interview, but we will do an extended interview on Friday's program. Professor Ellen Brown, my guest. I'm Gary Nall. I want to thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.